implementation of the NSF. There is talk about the JHRS platform. Now I'm going to get a little, just a quick overview about that program, just so you have understanding of the efforts that are going on with the government. Is there a procure of these type of programmable radios that is sort of a fundamental device that's going to be needed for these wireless networks and these smart networks? And I'll talk about some of the challenging areas, particularly in, you know, certainly the performance area for wireless networking is very much important to various government entities. So is extending the cognition, not just from data extraction, which is a huge area in itself, but down to our sort of behavioral radio aspect. Then lastly, talk about the improvement spectrum access, which you heard a little about with the SEC, and you'll hear a lot more about that later today as well. Just a quick, just to understand where I'm coming from, although I just want to highlight that my talk here today, my thoughts do not necessarily represent MITRE or our government sponsors. But MITRE is a nonprofit research organization set up to support the government on research and development issues. We have a number of government sponsors, both the DoD, the FAA, Treasury Department, Homeland Security, have supported various information technology, radio technology areas. That serves as a background of where I'm coming from. I want to talk about some higher level themes that don't necessarily get down to the wireless network. And just to put the wireless network in the context of what the government users really need. And it serves three sort of recurring themes that you can say is decision support area. That is, in the end, you know, all wireless networking is really just conveying data and maybe providing a simple service. If there's something, at least for the government user, that needs to be done, that's the decision making, whether it be in the military context, or in an air traffic control context, you have to make decisions. And here, you know, you need to have the knowledge to make those decisions. And so ultimately, wireless network has to provide that base from which you can draw that in order for convey the decision-making process. And a big part of that, too, is also the situational awareness, that is understanding the environment, understanding what is out there, what is the truth that is out there. And so certainly, wireless networking can support that. But that's another one of these high-level themes that you don't always necessarily think about when we're trying to figure out the last little bit of quality of service, but you have to do situational awareness. And ultimately, another very large area now doesn't have as much of an impact on the wireless networking side, certainly enterprise management. How do you manage all the data that we have out there? How do you extract information from all that data? Certainly a huge problem area for the government to consider. So these are sort of the high-level reoccurring themes that I just want to remind us that ultimately all the wonderful things within wireless networking has to support sort of higher level functionality for our thinking, particularly in the government side. These are things that we have MITRE been sort of identifying. There's also some emerging research themes that we could drill down a little bit and make a systems engineering, enterprise engineering, the big areas I mentioned. And certainly there's a lot of other research themes that are going on out there that will have an impact on wireless and spectrum innovations. And certainly within the MITRE context, we focus on a couple areas about technology, bioinformatics, but also knitted sensors, which is also part of the NSF solicitation, although that's not necessarily the topic of today, but that's certainly a big area. Just a quick little flavor on that. There's a lot of going on, and just understanding, again, this is situational awareness, and this is where network or net sensors, whatever term you want to use, comes into play here. From a military perspective, it's understanding the battlefield, understanding this view of what's out there. There's also certainly a lot of commercial applications going on with net sensors. But the point here is that there's somehow a little difference in what you need. And I'm going to talk about that in the communications context as well. That military or other government users sometimes have a slightly different perspective of what they need than maybe in the commercial application. That's very true in the dead sensors, it's very true in the commercial applications. Some of the observations that we're coming up with is in some of the research that we do and some of the support of our government sponsors is that, just as I mentioned, little gaps sometimes between the government needs and some of the commercial needs. And so as the academic community, hopefully you can also appreciate that and bring thinking to both sides of the problems. And that sometimes point solutions are not always going to provide the optimal solution or meet all the needs. For example, if you're going to look at topology discovery and you want to have lots of lows, well, you're certainly going to impact performance there. So you have to be aware of that. There's trade-offs in anything that we're doing. Or if you're going to do other things and spoofing TCP or providing PEPs or other performance enhancements in the transport layer, that's also going to have an impact in the satellite context. And you're going to lose some of your functionality that was originally built into the wired network world. And it's also, it is difficult doing these multiple trade-offs and how you're going to meet the different needs. So I'm going to sort of frame my rest of my talk here today, sort of with that overview, high level, into sort of three research challenging areas. One very large one, certainly ensuring performance in mobile environment. And that's obviously lots of wonderful, rich research areas there, both security, performance, in that area. Another area is extending cognition. And I say extending cognition, it's not just taking it from a data extraction, information extraction, but down to how we behave, how systems perform. And we'll talk about that. I think you'll hear a lot more later today on that sort of area. And also streaming spectrum access. Joe mentioned that in his introductory talk, that I think the time is right now to consider new innovations for looking at the spectrum. And the issue really is that it's not so much of a capacity spectrum scarcity, it's more of an access issue. Traditionally, it's been much more controlled, access between heads there. But I think with the smarts that we're developing into our platform, we can certainly improve that access as well. So those are sort of three research areas I'll talk about. But first, we'll talk a little bit about enabling platforms. One thing Joe wanted me to mention about was the JTRS program as an example of a set of smart platforms that are out there. Just real quick, certainly there's lots of programmable platforms out there today, very simple ones that you could spin from just going to, say, a vendor like Pentek. They have development cards, four DSPs, a couple FPGAs, get a couple specialized ASICs, and voila, you have an SDR right there. And you can start spinning your own platform if you want to go into the development aspect. So these boards are out there from places like Pentek and other places that you can get and develop your own software radio, cognitive radio. These capabilities are out there. And again, the challenge is how do you partition your processing between different capable, if you want the performance and ASIC side, if you want more programmability, certainly on the DSP side. These are the things I'm sure you're all aware of, but these platforms are available today just to do basic or innovative research at a higher level. Probably the most significant effort in an SDR platform is the military's procurement of the Joint Tactical Radio System. And JTRS is not just a radio platform, it's also common architecture and waveforms. And I'll talk a little bit about that, because that's an important thing, I think, when you start moving forward on developing platforms, developing systems, that they've provided now a possible standard from which you could draw from to have that portability, interoperability, as well as developing your own waveforms or networking capabilities. So essentially, JTRS has two aspects. There's a family of radios being procured. There's a set of clusters, and I'll just briefly go over that. And then there's also the waveforms and the open architecture. And I'm not going to go into all the details. There might be some people out there from the program office or the contractors here today. Essentially, the cluster development is actually procuring the radios themselves, a set of platforms. There's cluster one. So if you hear this terminology, this is what you're referring to. Each of the clusters is going to have its own form factor, its own specific functionality that's being prepared. However, it's all going to be compliant to that overall open architecture. So these are sort of the initial clusters. Cluster one is moving forward, as are some of the others. Recently, there's a merging of a couple of the other cluster three and four into another package. So these packages are being procured in different form factors. They're all going to be compliant and available and capable of running in different waveforms. And it's another big part of the JTRS effort is the waveform development. That is software-based waveforms now. We're not just talking about embedded hardware-type waveforms, but these are actually software-based waveforms. So it's going to have legacy waveforms, it's going to introduce a new waveform to help with networking, that is the wideband networking waveform, and it's also going to go into some commercial standards and public safety waveforms that are going to be procured as part of the effort. And these are all going to run on top of the various platforms. So JTRS is not only against platforms, but it's also waveforms for them. But sort of unifying the waveforms and the portability is the software communication architecture. And here the architecture sort of defines both the hardware framework, it defines the software functionality, or at least the basics for that, as well as a core framework for the standing operating environment, the interfaces that are needed to provide the service, and to provide a standard way of interacting between the software and the hardware platform itself. SCA has waveforms, the core framework that interacts with the hardware itself. SCA, the intent is to provide interoperability and to provide the flexibility, scalability, and eventually the sort of procurement for costs. It's, SCA is also intended to become a standard, and we're not sure where it is exactly, but pretty close to being within the object management group to standardize that core framework in the SCA. So that real quickly is what JTRS is about. It's a platform that there may be, I think Joe talked about partnerships here. Certainly that's a program with some of the vendors in that market. It would be something to consider as they start moving out these platforms for systems. Certainly the military is procuring them right now, but there may be opportunities there as well. Or you can also consider this being attention to the SCA framework and how that may help your, you to developing your own radio bases and platforms. Essentially these platforms are out there to support the different problem areas for research. And I'm going to go into the first sort of research space, which is performance, security, and mobile management. Now, I'm not going to go into this too much. I think probably most of you are working in this space already or very familiar with it. There's a huge number of topics that are involved with mobility. I just threw a few things on this here, some general areas of management, topography, and I think it's also part of the announcement, the solicitation staff, is to look at many areas in here. And how do you consider the mobility, the variability of an ad hoc network of wireless, and to account for that. And certainly security, authentication, quality of service, etc. All things I'm sure you're all very familiar with. Some specific examples, again, so lots of words here. I won't go into that much detail, but the whole area of performance for wireless networking, it's not just going to be taking what we've done in the wired world and translating. It's certainly, as I'm sure you're all aware, something that we have to consider. So, again, I could go into this much space, but it's certainly a big challenge for our government sponsors is this whole area of performance and security. I'm going to jump down to spectrum access, since that's something I think some of you may not be as much aware, but it's certainly part of the solicitation for the NSF, is that we're looking at innovative ways of getting into accessing the spectrum, and using this resource that's unique. Right? It's not inexhaustible per se, but yet we're not, you don't use it up. But in the end, it's really not spectrum scarcity. I think others have, Joe mentioned that, Thomas mentioned that, I think there are others today who talked about that. It's not so much a scarcity problem as it is an access problem. And so how do we access the spectrum? I think the time is right. I think both you see with the proceedings at the FCC that initially when the management system was set up for spectrum management, there was this perceived notion of chaos that was out there, and so we needed to have sort of a command and control, very segmented frequency perspective back in the early 1900s. And from that, was spawned the 1927 Radio Act, et cetera, then the commission then came out of that. And we created our own sort of bifurcated system for managing the spectrum, both the government side and the commercial local government side with the FCC. So we had this sort of bifurcated system that has been moving forward, sort of the command and controls, as some people have termed it, through the years. Now, there's been lots of discussion over the years, well, was that the right model? Is it necessary? Lama Coase being an economist, of course, the most prominent paper that takes a very economic, market-based approach to looking at, well, why do we consider radio anything different than other resources? Why do we consider it? Argues that it makes a strong case, and in fact, a Nobel Prize-winning case of transaction costs and how that affects, how you access the resources really no different for different types of technologies. But I think what you've seen now lately, both with the FCC, the Spectrum Policy Task Force, in the UK, Martin Cave, in his reports, that there's a receptiveness to new change now. And I think that was the point of what Thomas was saying, that there is an interest now in changing the whole the spectrum access, allowing some more of these dynamic cases to look at innovative ways of doing it. And I think we're seeing some movement that way. In the Spectrum Policy Task Force and other people have also noted that there's sort of three regulatory models that have been used. There's certainly the command and control, where you define specifically the regulatory environment, the frequencies that a system, certain system can and not use, government versus non-government use. And that's sort of more or less where we started out, but certainly it's been moving toward other models. For example, exclusive use or market-based, which a lot of economists believe is, well, spectrum is no different than other resources, let's just use market-based approaches. For example, you could argue that auctioning off spectrum is sort of moving that way to some degree, or providing flexibility that allow them to provide other services besides just defining specific services. So that flexibility is sort of market-based or exclusive use-based. And there's sort of enabled recently the commons concepts, the unlicensed concepts, where using technology or other etiquette methods, you can certainly access the spectrum without having problems, and certainly Wi-Fi is a big case for that. But so where we are today is, you know, I could argue exactly where the X might go, which flavors do we have. We have unlicensed, we have some working mechanisms, still probably more strongly towards the command and control. But there's certainly an interest in moving to other areas. So where are we going to move this space, and where do we move our regulatory models? Somewhat dependent upon, you know, the research that's going on out there. You know, where does that X move to? And in the end, maybe it's not just a small X. Maybe it's a whole flavor of unlicensed, market-based, as well as command and control for certain areas out there. So I think this gives you sort of a flavor that there is this interest out there in changing the regulatory models and the regulatory approach that we have. Just quickly, I don't think I need to go into this, but certainly technology enabling that capability. And Joe mentioned the same thing, that, you know, we can now access beyond just changing frequency, segmenting people by frequency. You get space, you get time, signal format, other ways of sharing or partitioning the spectrum space. It's not just frequency anymore. Yet, in an MTIA chart that everybody puts on their thing, isn't the only way of looking at spectrum. And I think you have to think of the space as a multi-dimensional, not necessarily orthogonal units either, or dimensions either here. So, but there's ways now with the smart tools we've developing the cognitive radios to access all parts of that. Now you could argue spectrum space could also be used for market-based, that you can define rights based upon all the dimensions of the spectrum, or it could be used in being smart and unlicensed operations. You can bounce and use the different trade-offs between the different dimensions, not just one frequency separation, spatial frequency separation, directionality is an important part. Ed mentioned the north point. There's a very clear case of where directionality comes into play of allowing multiple services or multiple systems to share space. In this new access regime, there's certainly different ways of looking at how you can do access. You can do a very opportunistic type of access where you measure the environment in which you're in, and then take advantage of the spectrum space that's not being used and access the spectrum there on an intermittent basis. So it's very simple, measure the environment, look where your open space is, the white space, take advantage of that, get off, listen again. Sort of very simplistic, but yet, you know, sort of a lot of interesting technical issues there. Also, you could access spectrum in a much more coordinated fashion in wireless networking. There could be control channels that allow you to determine which frequencies or where, who uses what zone within the spectrum space. So that's another way of looking at it. But I think we're also beyond just highly controlled networking environments and opportunistic. There certainly could be smarter concepts, smarter architecture. I think that's part of the intent of the NSF solicitation, is to look at these other architectures that we can use out of cognition, not just opportunistically, not just in a very controlled fashion, but maybe other ways of mixing, matching, or even things we haven't thought about yet. So I think that's the intent here. So the research community to bring that forward. I'm going to go back to that, taking that cognition. Certainly, we can drive cognition down to how we use resources and not just data extraction. Now that we have that. Of course, what is cognition? What does that really mean? I threw up a few definitions here. Cognitive radio was first started coming out, and Joseph Mottola happens to work at MITRE. Thesis, he talks a little bit about cognitive radio and how we can then, I can read the definition here. The FCC and NPRM out there also sort of defined, at least it's within the space, that cognitive radio is aware of its environment and can alter its way it uses the space transmission. It's not just SDRs, which has a definition take into account not just the ability to change, but how it changes. And so the key attributes is that sort of ability to adapt, the ability to read, not in an awareness. It's not just changing, but it's being aware and smartly adjusting that. So it's ability to act to your environment. And certainly there's a lot of examples that are going on out there. But here's some specific examples, I think, this afternoon. And I'm going to talk a little about DFS because it's a very rudimentary cognition. Nothing special, nothing, but it still is a pointer towards cognition. Lots of activities going on, so I don't think I need to go over all these. I just want to talk about dynamic frequency selection. You heard it mentioned this morning already. DFS, in its very simplistic form, is a listen before talk mechanism. Nothing significantly innovative there, nothing truly earth-shattering, but yet it's the very first sort of forms of cognition that are actually being used in a regulatory environment as well. It's being mandated to be used in the 5 gigahertz, and that's the 225 megahertz that I was talking about. It's up in the 5 gigahertz band. You're now going to have sharing between government radar systems and wireless unlicensed networks. And they're all going to be mandated to have this rudimentary form of cognition, this dynamic frequency selection. Basically, what it's doing is it has to listen to the channel first. If there's nobody there, it can then start transmitting. Now, it has to keep listening occasionally to make sure no radar system pops in. If it does, it has to move on. There is a system there when you first turn on, then you can't use that thing, can't use that particular channel for a specified time. So it's a very specific level of intelligence that you have to listen and then you act according to what you're listening to. Again, nothing innovative, but it's now being tried within the FCC and it's also being in the international community as well. So this is just one form